us rest. Let us rest for this moment on the forming edge of our lives. Let us resist for a while that headlong tumble into the next moment. Let us claim for ourselves a brief time of stillness and calm amidst the bustle of everyday life. It's good to make time for awareness and for gratitude and for reflection here together in this peaceful place. Blessed by all those who have worshipped here before us, preparing the way for all those who will gather here in the years to come, a progressive community of faith. So good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Sunday morning here at Essex Church, where our Kensington Unitarians community is based. Ours is a community created by all people of goodwill who choose to walk through our doors. All kinds of people gather here, knowing that we won't be judged for the size of our bank balance or the length of our education or by the kind of lifestyle we're choosing to lead or the people we choose to love. And we know that we don't have the answers to life's complexities, but we're willing to share the quest with one another and to assist one another along the way. This morning is the final week of this month's ministry theme of peace, and today we'll be hearing about some paths to peace happening in communities around the world. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome Linda Kane, who comes from our fellow Liberal community, cousins we've decided to call each other, the non-subscribing Presbyterians. Linda is a lay preacher and a member of the All Souls Church community in Belfast, which I highly recommend you visit if life ever takes you there. Linda, I welcome you and everyone else here today. And our chalice is lit, this symbol connecting us with progressive religious communities the world over. And I light it this morning in the hope that everyone on our planet Earth home, every one of the 7.7 billion people we share this planet with, all those different kinds of people might feel welcomed by someone, somewhere, sometime this day. Welcomed just as they are. It's only a little story, but it's another way to make that point about right and wrong. See if this speaks to you. The story is told of a wandering monk who passed by a courtyard of a monastery, and where they heard two groups of monks arguing about the temple flag that was fluttering in the breeze. Have you ever heard a group of monks arguing? Well, they sound just like us. Their voices go a bit louder and a bit higher to try and make their point, trying to prove that their side is right and the other side is wrong. It's the flag that moves, one group argued. No, it's the wind that moves, argued the other group. And back and forth they went, as only monks can, surely, responding to the logic of the other side, coming up with new rationales for their respective positions, new pieces of evidence to prove their point of view. But it just came down to, it's the wind that moves. It's the flag that moves. And after listening for a while, the travelling monk interrupted them and said, if you look more closely, you'll see that it's neither the flag nor the wind that moves. What's moving is your mind. And it's just another one of those teaching stories, this, to show us, to remind us how easily we fall into either or thinking. It doesn't matter what the subject is. I mean, have you had an either-or discussion this week? I've certainly had a few just in my head. And what this teaching is reminding us is of the value of witnessing our thought processes. Habitual thoughts and feelings arise automatically, but we can actually stop that process when we witness them. And one method of doing that is to ask ourselves, did I consciously choose that thought? And if I didn't consciously choose that particular thought, like I know the way to do the washing up, which does seem to be one of my issues, then we can ask ourselves, well, what thought do I choose to have? I choose to have the thought that there are multiple ways to wash up, and none of them is right, and none of them is wrong. Well, actually, I'm really keen on hot water. I'm just saying that, nothing else. And it reminds me of one of my favourite sayings about peace that we were talking about at the beginning of the month in Heart and Soul, learned years ago from the Course in Miracles, which is, I could see peace instead of this. To be said every time a troubling, worrying thought comes into mind, I have the choice. Do I go with that worrying thought, or do I choose to think of peace instead? Easier said than done, I know. So should we take that thought into a time of prayer and reflection now? As I invite you to align yourself with that which is of greatest worth for you, your own inner sense of the light within us all, the ground of your being, the God of your hearts and your understanding, that beloved spirit of life and of love. Most of us will be aware of some I'm right kind of thinking in our own lives, our own versions of the flag and the wind and the many ways of washing up. Let us then be courageous explorers of our own need to be right and of the vulnerabilities that so often lie beneath fixed thinking. Let us, in quiet moments such as this, ask the question, why do I need to be right? And let us move this awareness to our wider world and to the many places of conflict where fixed thinking has built dividing walls between people, created an us and them way of living. We might think particularly of those trapped in conflicts in the Yemen and Syria, whose suffering comes because others have created divisions between peoples and encouraged neighbour to turn upon neighbour. And in a brief moment of stillness, let us send our thoughts and prayers to those we know to be in need this day. Be that a troubled part of ourselves, a troubled family member or friend, or those we hear of only in the news. And may our care and our concern inspire us to take simple actions that might improve the life of another this day, that the urge towards peace might be strengthened. And may this be for the greater good of all. Amen.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is Linda Kane, and it's a pleasure to be with you all this morning here in your lovely church. It's my first time, and you've all made me feel very welcome. And I'd like to say a big thank you to Sarah for your hospitality. And I'm here because of the affiliation with my home congregation, which is All Souls Non-Subscribing Presbyterian Church in Belfast. Quite the mouthful. But all it means is we are a liberal, progressive, inclusive Christian community, part of the non-subscribing Presbyterian tradition. And all that means is we don't subscribe to the Westminster Confession of Faith. So in the essence of peace, we saw fit to break away and fall out with our Presbyterian neighbours many moons ago. And we're non-creedal, and everyone is welcome. I am a lay preacher, and in all that wisdom that I don't own, I will try and share some thoughts with you this morning. And we had a bit of a debate about what to call my talk, and so I thought, ironically, everything you need to know about Northern Ireland, you're certainly not going to get from me this morning. But I'd like to share, I suppose, my own journey in Northern Ireland of peace. And whilst it's not a unique story to myself, it is like a modern day version of a book that was written in the 80s called Across the Barricades, which is about a couple, one from a Protestant background and one from a Catholic background. And that is the situation that I find myself in, as I am from a Protestant loyalist background and my husband is from a Catholic Republican background. And so that is my journey. Northern Ireland has quite a unique religious, cultural, political and social landscape, pretty much like everywhere else does. My childhood began in a small village outside a town called Ballymena. I was born in Ballymena on Friday, the 11th of January at 10 past 1, 1980. So my mother reminds me. And I lived for the first lot of years of my life in a small village called Kells. And let me try and give you some insight into what Kells looked like. So I was baptised in the local Church of Ireland that my family had belonged to for generations, and I don't have a single memory of what that church looks like because we never went. I think I was sent to Sunday school a couple of times, and I'm in denial that it was because of my bad behaviour, but I didn't go back. I'm just going to leave it at I didn't like it. We never went to church. We weren't what would have been referred to as a good living family. That's a term for those who are, and I'm going to do it again, saved in Northern Ireland. We're good living. But we never went to church unless it was a baptism, a funeral, or a wedding. The minister or one of the elders would have come and done home visits, of course, and you were on your best behaviour under threat of the wooden spoon from your mother. But we never went to church. So I never grew up in a religious household. I didn't actually really know what having a faith or Christianity or religion was, outside of how I interpreted it culturally. So if that's the religious context, let me move to explain the cultural context. My village that I lived in was loyalist. There's no other word for it. There were very few people who weren't Protestant. And if you happen to be Catholic and living in that area, woe betide, because you would have been targeted. Part of my childhood was about preparing the bonfire for the 12th of July, for the 11th night. It was about painting curbstones, it was about drawing murals, and there was a sense of togetherness in that. That kind of united front of that was what identified us. And it was a good time. You know, for example, the build up to the 12th of July was a wonderful family occasion. My mother scrubbed me to within an inch of my life until I think I shone, and she actually would use that term, your hair was shining. I got a new outfit every year, and we were dressed and suited and booted for a big family affair on the 12th of July, where I would go and watch my father and family members and friends march in either a band or the Orange Lodge. I, at one point in my life, joined a band, so I got to see it as a member of an accordion band. And I have good fond memories of those times. And again, it was that sense of connectedness and cultural belonging. Of course, whilst all the men went to the pub on the 12th day, all us kids got sent to either the church or the stage at what we called the field. We all gathered in a field. This must sound so strange. We gathered in a field. So we marched to a field. We gathered in a field. The men went to the pub, and the kids were sent to hear the preachers, just so it looked as if someone from the band was there. The other cultural influence where I grew up was Ulster Scots, and you may be able to discern from my dulcet tones that I am indeed an Ulster Scot. So some words that I say may sound a little bit Scottish to you, but I assure you I am from Ballymena. And especially where language was concerned, you know, I was partly raised by my grandmother, and that richness of language I still hold dearly today, though I don't per se believe that Ulster Scots is a language. I'm very proud of a lot of those words and terms and phrases of reference that I grew up with. So if that describes the cultural, gives you a bit of an insight, let me move to the political. And my background politically can be described in one sentence: orange, never green. So it was everything Protestant, loyalist, and orange. Never the other. It was that dichotomy. You were one or you were the other. And I grew up in DUP territory, and we'll just leave it there. My mum often says, if I've nothing good to say, I shouldn't say anything. And I've nothing good to say about the DUP. If we move then to my husband, Kevin, what a difference. So my husband is from the heart of West Belfast. He grew up, he has a few years on me. He grew up in the 70s and 80s, and his environment would have looked very different. So again, if I start with religion, my husband was born into a Catholic family, and it was Mass every Sunday without exception. He would have grown up with, it was a very intimate and proud thing to have pictures on your walls of the Virgin Mary, the Sacred Heart, little statues of saints that you had a particular affiliation with. And these things were very important to the working class, particularly Catholic. There were, of course, priests who held very central and important roles in the lives of Catholics. I know that now there's a very different landscape in light of historical abuse, but when my husband was young, the priest would have had a very central and important role, and still does, in the lives of Catholic families, almost at that infallible level. So if that's the religion, if I move to the cultural, West Belfast, it was everything GAA. So it was everything Gaelic in terms of sport and culture and music and tradition. It was very strong affiliation and identity as Irish, the same as where I'm from would have been called Southern Ireland, or the Free State, as we like to call it. And there would have been ceilidhs and traditional music and fetes and things like this that were completely alien to me and my background. So that was the culture. The politics were simple. It was the opposite of mine. It was always green and never orange. It was vote green to keep them out, and vice versa. The difference was, and the primary reason our childhoods were so different, was I had total freedom. I belonged to the community that had the majority. Always the majority. And there was a certain sense of superiority that came with that, a certain sense of entitlement for God and Ulster, and Ulster was mine. I was Protestant. It was my country. My husband grew up with soldiers armed on the street corners of hijacked and burnt out vehicles as a playground, roadblocks, living with internment where people would be arrested without particular due cause, scrutiny constantly, an 800 metre long peace wall to separate communities, but actually, depending on your perspective, to pen one particular community in. The term second class citizens probably doesn't quite cut it. And today, the peace wall still exists, although there are plans, I think, by 2023 to try and bring them down. And there's a lot of cross-community work being done at grassroots level to facilitate that. So that's how our childhoods looked, and that's what I perceive were the main differences. But what about today in Northern Ireland? Well, we have two young daughters, Erin, who's 8, and Sarah, who is 4. And basically, they can be whatever they want. They've been baptised in my church because baptism was important to me. My husband describes himself as an atheist. I describe him as a lapsed Catholic. He's probably somewhere in between. But he wasn't bothered by baptism, but he knew it was important to me. And it wasn't even a compromise for him. He was fine about it. But I'm not bringing my children up in anything. They can learn their own path, they can choose their own path, they can find their own path, whatever way they want to interpret it. And so there won't be that demarcation of Protestant and Catholic in our house. They'll just simply be mum and dad. And for us, the way that we got to that same point was by stepping outside of our immediate environment, by leaving what were considered our social and cultural and religious and political norms, and broadening our horizons and opening our minds to something that looked and sounded different. And realizing actually that at the end of the day, we could accept that difference and celebrate that difference without losing our own identity. So I left the Bible Belt of Ballymena and went to university in Belfast. And I know for people in England, you're thinking, that's 35 miles up the road. That's not leaving anything. That's a half an hour up the M2. My husband, slightly further, it took him an hour to get to Derry. So he left Belfast and went to Derry. But I suppose what I mean is it's a metaphorical journey as well. It's a leaving behind of what was familiar and what we were told was right, and opening our minds to something a little bit different, and people who were different, but actually with more in common. And it's often said that working class, Protestants and Catholics in Northern Ireland have much more in common than with their middle-class counterparts. And it is true. But for our daughters, they won't have to do that. They won't have to leave home. They won't have to travel, albeit half an hour up the road, because they'll grow up in an integrated education system. And that's something that we were very strongly opinionated about. You see, in Northern Ireland, we still have a demarcation. We have Catholic-maintained schools, and we have state-run Protestant schools. So in any given area, because the two distinctive communities still exist, there will be two sets of education provision, and it's simply not sustainable. Our children attend Hazelwood Integrated Primary School, and they're surrounded by Eastern European children, Chinese children, Catholic, Protestant, black, white, and every colour in between. And it's wonderful. My little one, Sarah, she recently went to her best friend. She's just started nursery in September, but this is her best friend. And her best friend is called Elise. And Elise's mum is called Brody, and she's from Glasgow, and her dad is Chinese. And that's her best friend, and long may it continue. Integrated education is the way forward in Northern Ireland. It is a way to map out a road of peace that means it is your norm. It's not something you have to journey towards. It's not something you have to understand. It's something that will be inherent and innate to you as you grow up with it. That's the difference between how my husband and I grew up and how our children will grow up. And for me, that's what peace in Northern Ireland gives me and means to me. It is that we recognise our similarities, but that we celebrate and accept our differences. And yet we can still proudly hold firm our own religious and cultural identity, but importantly, without prejudice against anybody else. Amen. Now that you know everything there is to know about Northern Ireland, Sarah has asked me to give you a Celtic blessing, and then it will be sung by Margaret for a song. Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace of the shining stars to you. Deep peace of the infinite peace to you. Moon and stars pour their healing light on you. Deep peace of the light of the world to you this day. Thank you.
I invite you now into a time of meditation. And having heard of some lives in Northern Ireland, and knowing what we know of times of trouble in that land and many others, I invite you, if you wish, in this time of meditation, to think about your own times of trouble and what helped you to get through those times. Because what struck me as I thought about this issue of peace on earth is how nothing ever stays the same. Life moves on, whatever the circumstances. So what helped you through your times of trouble? And our few moments of shared stillness together will come to an end with a chime from our bell. What has helped you through your time of trouble? It's the last call for items for the newsletter today. And if you want to hear my gems, my thoughts on peace, you're going to have to read the next newsletter, because I'm going to save most of them for that. But what I would say is that, you know, in this month, we've been thinking about peace all month. And what has really... struck me. Well, it's left me with a profound respect for anyone who actually rolls up their sleeves and does something about making life here on earth a more peaceful experience than it might otherwise be. I'm left wondering about our combative natures, about the struggles that go on in communities throughout our world, but also within each and every one of us. Often on a daily basis. I don't know the truth of thinkers like Steven Pinker's assertion that despite all we hear of around the world, that he asserts that we human beings are actually living more peacefully together than we ever have. There's plenty to think about there. And I've read lots about peace processes this month and about people who work towards peace in active and innovative ways. And what strikes me, at the core of most of those peace processes, is an encouragement. Well, firstly, the creating of a safe space, and then the encouragement for people to tell their own stories within a safe space and to be truly heard in the telling of their tales. And yes, most of us, I think, are painfully aware of our own versions of the flags and the wind story, the I'm right kind of thinking in our lives. And that seems to me a crucial path to peace that we all need to be taking, to challenge our own either or dualistic kind of thinking in life. Vietnamese meditation teacher Thich Nhat Hanh wrote that peace is every step.
And so in the week ahead, let us choose a path of peace in our thinking, in our speaking, in the ways we treat those we love, in the ways we respond to those we find difficult.
And let us be brave in seeking to hear of life from other points of view, and tireless in finding better ways to communicate one with another. For this is what our world needs now. Amen. Amen. Go well and blessed be you.